Hello everybody, it's George from Ireland, so welcome back to my channel once again. Just commenting on the Russo-Ukrainian war. It's now been going on for 20 months, and I think it's almost universally agreed that it's still got quite a long way to go, at least a year. The war that some people thought, well, I thought was going to last more like 3 months, is going to last at least 3 years. So we're coming into the winter season, and it begs the question, what is Russia's strategy now? They thought a blitzkrieg would do it in February 2022, and that proved to be an absolutely ignominious failure for them. They boasted that they would take Kiev within 2 days. 20 months later, they're nowhere even near. They're not in northern Ukraine at all, and there's really no indication that they'll attack via Belarus again. So they're obviously defending in the illegally occupied region. They've got Zaporizhia in southern Ukraine, a little bit defending around Bakhmut, and trying to hang on to Crimea. But what is their strategy? How are they going to win? Obviously, repel the Ukrainian counteroffensive. And they seem to be having some success with that, because the Ukrainians have made quite small progress, like 15 miles at the deepest point of penetration, and have got something like 85 miles to go at least till they get to the Sea of Azov. Even if the Ukrainians can get there, can they hold it when the Russians try and push them out again? Can they keep their supply lines? How are they going to win? Because they've got to rebuild their forces for major attacks. They've announced a 70% increase in their defense budget for the forthcoming year, the Ruskies. So that indicates that they're going to have to produce a lot more, partly to replace the something like 2,000 tanks they've had destroyed, perhaps a similar number damaged, a couple of hundred captured. Likewise, artillery pieces destroyed, maybe 70 fixed-wing aircraft destroyed, some helicopters, and quite a few more damaged. A couple of warships destroyed, some patrol boats destroyed, many more damaged, and things like that. So it's going to cost an awful lot, and then ramping up production of shells, missiles, and so forth. And NATO's been saying publicly, maybe unwisely to go public with this, that they just can't keep up. They're just not producing shells at the rate the Ukrainians are using them. And the NATO forces don't want to deplete their own armaments too much, just in case there's a war where they need them, because we've had this sort of 30-year peace dividend where armed forces were hugely slimmed down. And actually, these cuts in Western militaries cut into not just into fat, but into muscle. Like, put it this way, at the end of the Cold War, the British Army was about 150,000 strong. It's now about 70,000 strong. And bear in mind, the population of the United Kingdom has risen that time from something like 55 million to about 70 million. Now, admittedly, they say, yes, but this technology does the work of several soldiers, these drones and so on. And that's true up to the point. But military friends tell me, yes, but you still have to have boots on the ground, the things that only humans can do, and a human needs to control that, and so forth. So the Russians' partly is a strategy of attrition. As winning by a lightning campaign did not work for them, they think if they can simply string it out, that the West's an attention span of a mayfly. Look at Afghanistan. Okay, that went on for 20 years, and then the NATO forces were triumphant in almost every engagement. Eventually, the NATO public got fed up of paying for it and people dying, even though it was something like only 4,000 NATO soldiers. And out of a combined population of 800 million people in NATO countries, 4,000 deaths over 20 years is not high. I hope that doesn't come across as callous. I know that each soldier is irreplaceable for his or her family. Maybe not just soldier, marine, aviator, whoever. Anyway, so I think if they can just make it last, that the West will eventually go weary of paying the cost and pull out. Bear in mind, NATO is not actually fighting. There are no NATO soldiers are there. And it's true that some NATO civilians, often former military personnel, have volunteered for the International Legion for the Territorial Defense of Ukraine. The NATO might get scared off this nuclear weapons risk. And in a way, trying to ignore the Ukrainians, call it the Kiev regime. That's what Moscow is doing to delegitimize Ukraine. Much of this is a psychological operation, denying that Ukraine is a nation, saying that any Ukrainian who doesn't want to be ruled by Putin's Nazi regime is in fact a Nazi. I mean, the Ukrainian nationalists of all stripes, some left-wing, some right-wing, some centrist. A handful of Nazis back in the Second World War. Obviously, there were Russian Nazis too. They were there in every country. And because a small number of them, led by Stepan Bandera, they collaborated with the Third Reich, suggesting that any Ukrainian who doesn't want to be ruled by Putin's tyranny is a fascist, which is a preposterous lie. We see 7 million Ukrainians were in the Red Army. About 8 million Ukrainians were killed in the Second World War. Many civilians, some were military personnel, some were Jewish, some were not. And another thing which gives lie to the outrageous false accusation by the Kremlin that this is a fascist regime is the Babin Yar massacre in September 1942 outside Kiev, that was commemorated by President Zelensky, who's Jewish himself, by Ukrainian rabbis and Israeli diplomats and so on. Now, a Nazi regime would not do that. They would celebrate this if they didn't deny it. That's it. It's just this attempted erasure of a Ukrainian history, this attempted cultural and identitarian genocide, striving to deracinate the Ukrainians. And it's true that they have some cultural and linguistic links with Russians, but these Len are not, don't actually make them Russian. It's like saying the Russians are Ukrainian. I mean, they're still definitely different languages, so they're related, like German and English are related, but there's no doubt that they are different languages, and they're calling it the Ukrainian dialect. And I've known quite educated Russian people who spent some time in Western countries, and even then, some of them have had this bigoted attitude, being contemptuous towards Ukrainians, unless these Ukrainians are willing to class themselves as a category of Russian. Now, the attack on the energy infrastructure last autumn and winter was a notable feature of Russia's campaign. Partly it was to freeze the civilian population into submission, well, kill them, actually, because if it's minus 25 and you don't have heating, you're going to die, no matter how many blankets you have inside, especially if you're an elderly person or an infant. So it was a very cruel war against civilians. Admittedly, there was some sort of military rationale because the railway network is vital to Ukrainian military logistics, and that's electric. So to take that down, but anyway, it failed. It used up an awful lot of rockets and drones and missiles and was unsuccessful. And at some times, they'd reduced Ukraine's electricity output by about 30%. But Ukraine has been connected to the European Union electric grid. They've got smarter at repairing these things. They know how to split the grid and work around this. They've got more generators and battery packs, so if they could do so this winter, it'd be much less effective. This time last year, Russia had already begun its concerted campaign against the electric grid. Early October, the weather wasn't that cold, but they wanted to have it destroyed by the time the really cold weather came in November. But anyway, it failed. There's no indication to say it would work this time. The fact they haven't even started this time is indicative that they're not going to try. They run short on these missiles, drones, rockets, and so forth. So I suggest they will actually save those for military targets rather than doing what they were doing previously. One thing is to sow division in Western countries with their disinformation campaign and win people over. But have had some success with the election of Robert Fico. He's going to be Prime Minister of Slovakia, who's fairly sympathetic to their position. What was I going to say? The other things I should point out about what you should do if you want to subscribe to me and get great content behind the Patreon paywall. My little spiel that I've got to tell you. So thank you, as always, for watching my channel. If you'd like a sample more of my content, or better yet, actively support my work, please go to my website, georgefromireland.com, and my Patreon page at patreon.com/georgefromireland. My website contains all of my newest videos and writings, as well as a podcast of audio versions of my videos. On Patreon, you can find over 1,400 of my best quality articles from as far back as 2010, as well as a subscriber-only 3,000-plus episode podcast feed of all my YouTube videos from across three channels, Reflections, English Law, and British Poesy. Patreon also includes content not available on any of my channels or website, so treat yourself to the full experience of my content on Patreon for as little as £2 a month. You can support my work by donating to georgecallahan79@gmail.com on PayPal. Thank you very much for your continued loyalty and viewership. Until next time, goodbye. Please may I have toast?